started off with a little dream and walking along the streets in Los Altos, wondering, you know, where we could go with all of this. I often had an idea that I said, you know, I don't want to build a big company, but I'd like to have a small business that had a reputation on the peninsula in San Francisco Bay Area. That's it. Just a small, where people did right livelihood, right work, and that's it.
And you've done it.
And that's what we've done.
How did you meet?
I was teaching in the psychology department at San Francisco State. I got offered a course I hadn't taught before at the last minute because the teacher who was supposed to teach the class had to go do something else. The class was called The Psychology of Human Sexuality. Small group of people, probably 14 people, summer class, and this beautiful woman walks in. I said, ooh, she's something else. And so as the semester went on, we would have conversations after class. Perhaps I'd take her over to the library to give her a permit to get some sort of resource material out of the library. And by the time the class was over, I called her up and said the grades had been turned in. How about dinner?
He pissed me off extraordinarily because I handed in a paper that was just outstanding. And he gave me a B+.
It was a solid B+ paper, by the way.
I protested, and I said, this is not a B+ paper. This is an extraordinary paper. There are three parts to it. There's a huge amount of research. I've taken a huge amount of time doing this. And he said, no, it's a B+ paper. And I said, okay, what makes it to an A? And so he said, I need more references in the second section. So I ended up having to do more work, and then I did get an A in the end.
It was a long paper. It had lots of pages, and it was worth an A at the end.
It was an excellent A. The thing that I was so impressed with during that 8 weeks was that here was a person who loved teaching, and I fell in love with that. The great thing about looking at Rick and having him get people involved right from the beginning, have it very much student-led and student-directed and experiential, it was just an incredible kind of observation for me. I was a special ed teacher at that point. I was getting my master's degree, and so it was just an incredible class to be involved in.
When I met Mary, I had just finished my doctorate in psychology. And I had a series of part-time jobs. I was a consultant, I was doing some mental health work, and I was teaching. And I lived in Marin with a house I shared with some other people. And I was 38, I think, when I met Mary. And I just didn't feel like I had a career put together. I didn't know what to do. I wasn't interested in doing therapy, particularly. I liked the teaching a lot, and I wasn't making any money. And so about the time I met Mary, I think it was probably in the fall of that year, I saw an ad in the paper for a career counseling course in San Francisco. And they asked more money for this course than I had in the bank. I had to actually get a loan to go through this course. I think it was $2,500 or something. I didn't have that much money. And so I went and got this incredibly high-powered career consulting course, which guided me toward Silicon Valley, toward corporate life, because I knew I was tired of doing what I was doing. And in July of 1980, I started at Hewlett-Packard working in the training department in personnel, bringing in primarily my skill as a teacher. That went on for a number of years, and then I left Hewlett-Packard and went to Amdahl because they even had a more vibrant, in my judgment, training program. And my career at HP had kind of detoured off into a dead-end situation. But at Amdahl, which was a real company, I mean, HP was fun to be at for me. I mean, it's a good culture, at least back then, and I really enjoyed the work. But when I got to Amdahl, you had people who were more serious corporate types, And I realized they were just going to chew me up. I wasn't going to last there for any length of time at all. And I was gone in 18 months from Amdahl.
I do remember the night that Rick came home from Amdahl. And I was in the dining room. He came in and he said, "I can't take it one more day. And I've got to leave this company. I'm going to die if I don't."
In the meantime, I had joined the National Speakers Association. I'd been very much involved with Toastmasters, which I had joined when I went to HP. And then National Speakers Association gave me more of an entrepreneurial approach to this whole business thing of speaking and training and consulting. But I was still working for the company, for the corporation. But I began to get a vision of, you know, you could do this on your own. You could do your own company, I think. And that's really what I got from NSA. Because of Toastmasters, I was seeing a lot of people come through who needed this skill desperately. So I began to think, well, maybe I could do it on my own. And I wrote a business plan with the help of Melinda Henning. Actually, she wrote the business plan. She was taking a course at San Francisco State, and she had to come up with a business plan for a fictional company. And I had met her through NSA. And so she wrote the business plan, and we had several people put on it and stuff. And then I was working at Amdahl. I had actually created a board of directors for my company that I hadn't even started yet. I think by that time I had saved up around $18,000. Mary and I by that time also had purchased a house. And so we made an agreement about, what if I started this company and went belly up, what about the house? We had this thing all written down. We got a line of credit on the house. I had taken all my $18,000 and just plowed it into this new company. And I started teaching it at the junior college first. And, you know, it'd be a one-day course or a half-day course. And I'd get a little mailing list. People would give me their names. And pretty soon, so we began to build momentum. The key element, and I asked Mary to chime in on this, was I was still at Amdahl. I had been invited to come down and do an interview with the county of Redwood City to do a one-day program for the Department of Public Works. And they had this interview slot at 3 p.m. afternoon. But meanwhile, my manager had told me at Amdahl that we were going to have a special program on quality assurance, quality control, and it's mandatory for everybody. Nobody gets out of it, all the way up to VPs. Everybody's going to take this class. But I had to go for my interview. Well, my boss knew that we were doing some remodeling in our house, so I got Mary engaged in this, and she phoned up about 1:30, quarter to 2, saying, "We've had a flood in the basement." So in this classroom, mandatory training, in comes a support person with a pink slip saying, Rick, there's Rick. And I went over to my boss and I said, "Wow, there's this problem at home. Mary said I'm going to have to go." He said, "Okay." So I went and had the interview. And we got the job. But Mary always has felt a little bit, as a good Catholic girl growing up, she, what is that, a venial sin, or what is that?
Yeah, that would be a venial.
And I remember the day in 1985, it was November at the National Speakers Meeting, NSA meeting, and everybody would do self-introductions. And that Friday, I had gone into my boss at Amdahl, and I had resigned. And I stood up at the NSA meeting, and I said, I'm Rick Gilbert, and I quit my job yesterday, and on Monday morning, we're starting a company called Power Speaking. And everybody applauded, and I mean, it was me in a bedroom, you know, with a little telephone and a box of cards. And that's how it got started. We, of course, got a lot of clients from our previous contacts. So that's really helps a lot. I did some work with Hewlett-Packard, and we did some work for the city of Redwood City, or the county. And so there were lots of these kind of little things that started. I mean, we would do, you know, a whopping 2 programs a month, or maybe 1. And Mary would do the books. She would come home at night from her teaching job and take care of the books, which wasn't an awful lot to do in those days with the books. And that's how it got started. I was just hoping that we could, you know, pay our mortgage and pay a few of our expenses. And I think our goal for the first year was $80,000 or something like that. And our first year, we booked $106,000. And paid off the debt. So I mean, that little line of credit that we had on the house was paid off almost immediately. And the story is that my father had worked in the insurance industry. He was a very conservative Republican, an insurance guy. And when I went to get my graduate degree in psychology, he thought I was absolutely nuts. You know, I was in my 30s and I hadn't had a real job. And he kept saying, you know, what is this psychology nonsense? You know, get a job. Well, then by the time I was 40, I got that job at Hewlett-Packard. And he said, well, finally, you know, okay, you've got a real job. Now I understand. I know that company. They sell stock. And then I quit Hewlett-Packard. I went to Amdahl, and he said, well, I've never heard of this Amdahl company, but yeah, they sell stock too. I guess that's okay. Then I told him, I said, I've quit my job, and I'm going to start my own company. And he said, you're nuts. What's the matter with you? I mean, you had all these years where you were floating around doing some nonsense in psychology, and now, and you had a good job, and now you're quitting that. You're nuts. I mean, you have to get with a company and have a solid job and just stay there, because that's how you get to retirement. And that was my dad. Well, fast forward to the end of our first year in business, I was talking to him, and I said, you know, Dad, we grossed $106,000 this year. He got this faraway look in his eye, and he said, you know, I always wanted to go off on my own.
Rick was there, and he was the one that was calling, and he was the one that was trying to drum up business. And I was doing the communication as far as, we had a typewriter. That was the first piece of equipment that we bought. We had a typewriter.
We still have it. In fact, it's in the Jerry Johnson training room. It's on a shelf. We put it up there. It was going to be recycled the other day. And Melissa came out and said, no. I remember we spent like $150 on this IBM Selectric. And that was a big expense, huge. And we're not going to throw that puppy away. So it's up there on the shelf.
So I would do that kind of thing, and if some kind of packet had to be sent out, I would do that. But I started getting more involved because I made a decision that I wanted to have more involvement in the business. Rick and I were talking about it. We had this dream. And so another colleague and I wrote a proposal for a school district and said, we'd go half time. We were the best special ed teachers in the district. They did not want to lose us. She wanted to go for her PhD. I wanted to do this part time. So we did this for 2 years. And then after the 2 years, we knew that the business could afford it. So I went in. It was a big deal for me. I was at the top of my game. I had started this professional association. I had gotten the first computers in the district. I had relationships with organizations throughout the state. And I remember at the board meeting, it was just prior to making this decision, and we were discussing whether or not I was going to go full time. And I burst into tears at the board meeting. And I said, I don't know if I will have any value to the business. I don't know anything about the business world. I know something about education. And so it was a very difficult time for me making the decision. But I knew it was the right one. I remember one of the things that I was so worried about was it was going to be difference in relationships. That was the big thing for me. Relationships with my colleagues, relationships with the people I work with. And here it was going to be kind of a lonely thing. And it was just the two of us and Melinda at that point. And John had come on by then. And I remember at the end of the year, as I was looking and reflecting, what about going into this business? And I realized I had created the same kind of relationships in this arena as the other one. And that's the thing that made the difference. And then also my expertise, my ability to listen, my ability to do things financially was very helpful to the business. And so I realized I had brought in the skills from another area, and that was the difference.
Do you want to talk about the development of speaking to the big dogs?
There was a seminal moment. The reason we were in discussion was because of the coaching session that you had with that one executive.
Mm-hmm.
And he had gone in and he had used some of the ideas from his coaching. And Rick had said, okay, use stories, do all kinds of things that we recommend in power speaking. Well, he did exactly what was recommended.
Yeah.
And literally, he got into his big, long story.
Which would be great for power speaking. But not for speaking to the big dogs.
Right. And the CEO just screamed at him and said, "Where are you going?"
The guy said, in a kind of a whiny voice, "Well, you sent me for coaching, and the coach said to use stories." At which point the executive said, "Fire the coach and get on with it." So that was the big aha that said, oh, this really is different, isn't it, than day-to-day life.
Yeah.
And so how is this different?
So that was a seminal moment. And when we were thinking about who, what is the thing that we'd like to do for our clients, what kinds of thing, what is something that would be really helpful, we thought about all these mid-managers trying to speak up the line, and there aren't any rules written. And so that was our discussion. And we started thinking, well, we have lots of people that we could go to as a resource. We have all different kinds of CEOs we've coached. There are all kinds of VPs we've coached. Let's get them in a room. Let's find out.
We got six people to show up, several CEOs, and several other high-level executives, and we sent out invitations to our mailing list, and we expected to get 30, 40 people maybe. We ended up with 270 people who showed up for this thing from major corporations. Mary came up with this terrific idea that they could buy a sponsorship, so for a wholesale price, they could send 25 people rather than the retail price, right? So I looked out at the Sofitel in the large ballroom there, and we had, I don't know, 27 tables of 10 people looking back at us and these six executives sitting up here, and we had a whale of an afternoon. It was just terrific. It was, I think, 4 hours. Well, after that, we began to think, you know what? This is something here. How come so many people showed up for this thing? And at that point, we began to really ask serious questions about what is unique about speaking at the top level. Why is, because you look out of the room, and they were all middle management type people. But they weren't beginners. I mean, these were people who were 35, 40, 45, 50 years old in white shirts and ties and gray hair. I mean, these were serious VPs, director-level people. And those questions that they generated that day led us to develop questions that we used in interviews when we went out and began interviewing CEOs and CXOs, C-level executives, about this problem. After we had done just a few of the interviews, I had put together a very, very rough cut. In those days, it was VHS tape. It probably was 15 minutes of some of these interviews. We had had lunch with a woman who we knew quite well from Agilent, who was in corporate communications, I think, was her area. And after our lunch, she came over and looked at this tape, and she just went nuts about it. She said, "Can I have a copy of that tape? I want to take it in and show it to people. This is really hot stuff." Now, keep in mind, we had no budget for this. Nobody was asking for another program from us or saying, "Gee, why don't you make a program about executive communication?" Nobody was asking for that. But we got enough reactions like this person's reaction. We said, "You know what? This is hot. There's something going on here." We began to do the interviews, the recordings, the editing. By the time we were done, I think it took about a year to do all of these interviews and then get the editing done. Maybe a year and a half, we spent somewhere in the neighborhood of $125,000 to produce this thing. It was an hour and 40-minute DVD, professionally made. And within the first year, we made twice that back on the big dogs and the training that went with that big dogs program. We never really made a lot of money selling the DVD, but people were interested in using the DVD as a stimulus, and then our training came in after it, and we'd show people what to do with it.
I want to comment on something that has been true from the beginning, and it has something to do with gut power. You gotta trust your gut. Now, when we started doing and thinking about this, I can remember sitting down with some of the trainers and the trainers saying, it's not so different. I listened to those answers. It's not so different. One of our CFO said, you guys don't have any kind of distribution. This isn't, you know, how are you going to make back your money? We kept saying, well, this is something that I know, that we know, will make a difference. And we were the ones that said, we're doing it. Come hell or high water, we're going to do this.
And one of our board members even said, I don't want to rain on your parade. Remember those exact quotes. But I don't think this is going to fly. Well, as Mary just said, you trust your gut. And I think that's part of the spirit that has driven this company from the beginning. And say, excuse me, thank you for sharing your opinion. Get the hell out of the way. Here we go. And this just has taken off like you can't believe how successful this program has been. Because sure enough, there's a need in middle management to figure out, and in fact, it's career limiting or career building. If you know how to get your message across to the senior decision makers, you're going to be successful. And it's just been huge, absolutely huge.
They're growing to a point where they could be taking advantage of a premium name, a value that is rarely recognized in this type of industry, due to some unique projects and activities that the company has undertaken, for instance, speaking to the big dogs. My name is John Janes. I've been on the Power Speaking Board for 12 years. And if they can go along that way, making the most of the premium portion of their offerings and then expanding the more mainstay offerings to fill in and provide ongoing revenue, I think they can be a breakout successful company.
There has been a shift in how we've done business. In the beginning, it was a prayer and it was a relationship. And
you were saying the prayer. I wasn't saying the prayer.
Yeah, let's make it clear. Rick wasn't saying the prayer. But I was thinking a lot about prayer. But anyway, it was all dependent on, you know, who we knew. And it was a hopeful phone call after a workshop, after a successful workshop. And I would say it's out of the 21 years that this business has been in existence, it's been completely dependent upon relationships. I had looked for through our clients probably 3 meetings ago. Where did they come from? And almost 75% of them related to a successful program in the past, or related to meeting someone, or it was related to, here is a person who was happy at HP, and then they went to, and they gave us a call. Today, things are different, and it's only been in the last 2 years. We have a more formal sales process that Moira and I are involved in. And so we're looking at how can we get other people in that organization? Who would they recommend? So there's a little bit more of that today. So here's an example. 3 years ago, if we looked at our top 10 clients, there would only be one or maybe two that were over $100,000 worth of business. Today we look at it, and by the end of the year, we'll probably have 10 to 12. And so it's just a matter of going a little bit deeper, making those connections, creating some partnerships, and moving it out from there.
at the end of that class in 1978, the last day I go into the faculty room, and here's my mailbox, and it has one long-stemmed rose in it from this lady.
And what I wrote was, "Dear Rick, in the past eight weeks, I have watched the best teacher in action that I've ever had. Thank you."